Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Big transfer news today.
Who's moving?
Me. To the couch. With Domino's best deal ever since they just added stuffed crust.
Any pizza, any toppings, now with stuffed crust for $9.99.
It's a long-term contract with no release clause.
Only $9.99? Yeah, that sounds like the move. I'm heading straight to
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6/15 through 7/26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings, 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Year after year, 9 black-robed justices deliver their opinions from a building in Washington, D.C., and each word of their opinions has an impact on our everyday lives. What did they decide this term, and what does it mean for us? This week's episode is SCOTUS Roundup, October Term, 2025.
A bump in the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Hood.
I'm gonna kill you.
What are these dipshits been up to?
Back at it with these dummies. Well, my goodness, what a time.
My
what
goodness.
A time.
You know, ever since Ruth crossed over, it hasn't been the same.
I've been beefing with Ruth ever since she didn't retire. It's not like on one elderly woman's like tiny little shoulders to support an entire branch, co-equal branch of the government. But there's points where like Merrick Garland, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, these moments where it's like, we could have had things different. Doesn't mean we can't have things different again in the future. This term was a lot of old dissents from like the 90s became law. And you're like, oh, God. And then you read Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson's dissents from now. And you go like, we're going to make those law soon. That's what we're going to do.
That's our goal. That's what we're working towards.
Our goal. Well, thank you all for joining us at this Supreme Court roundup.
Yeah, we did one of these a while back. And a lot of stuff has been going on. So we thought it would be helpful to break it down into understandable terms.
After this, we will be rounding up the Supreme Court justices. Yeah. We're going to put them on a bus, and I'm going to do we're going to read this out loud to them in front of them. But they can't leave, so they're not in danger, by the way.
No.
They just have to listen. They have to hear.
The only thing in danger is their ego, because they're going to realize that they fucked up.
Boom, you were wrong this whole time. But you know what's not wrong? What's very, very right? It's getting on a boat with me and you.
Ooh, man. It is straight 3-digit degrees here for the next solid 2 weeks. So get me anywhere else.
Truly. I saw a friend of mine was on a cruise right now and posting the cutest pictures of her family, and they're having fun and doing excursions. And I'm like, that's going to be me in February. It's going to be all of us. Crime Wave at Sea. Go to crimewaveatsea.com, use code SINISTER, and get one of the last remaining cabins to go on the ultimate true crime cruise experience with us at sea.
Could be the last. And remember, we've said, and we'll find this out, I don't know how, if you're the 69th cabin.
That's right.
I forget what we agreed to, but we'll go
we'll
back
do a
and
lot
re-listen.
Of stuff
we agreed
we'll
to something.
You tell us. And if you're the 420th cabin that uses our code, you're getting flown to Dallas.
Yeah.
Baby. So keep that in mind. But yeah, go to crimewaveatsea.com, code SINISTER. Do it now, February 8th through 12th. Time is running out.
Yes. Yeah. As this episode will show us all, time is running out. But hopefully we're going to get somewhere good soon.
That's the plan. We're going to sail somewhere soon.
Yes. Today's the last day of the basket.
Oh,
so
the barbell basket.
Maybe.
The shift is happening.
Speaking this into the ether will help us out a little bit on the last days of Barbeau's basket.
The basket is nigh.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. The Supreme Court's October term opened on October 6, 2025, and closed on June 30, 2026, when the justices finished handing down opinions for the year. At the outset, the court had agreed to hear 39 cases, only 19 of which were then scheduled for oral argument, while it continued sorting through petitions. By the time the dust settled, that docket had grown to 59 cases heard over the course of the term.
So for those of you not familiar, or if you're not from the United States, we have three branches of government. We have the executive, which is the president. We'll talk about what that's becoming through these cases. We have the legislative, which is Congress that make laws. And we have this, the judicial, headed by the Supreme Court, which is nine justices with lifetime appointments.
Insane. Insane. What job, apart from being a parent, are you appointed a lifetime of? Ever.
I think in a couple years when we've done court reform where we have 20-year terms or 15-year rotating terms or 12-year staggered terms or something, we'll look back and go, Jesus Christ, yeah. You're telling me we used to do lifetime appointments? No wonder the results were so crazy.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah.
Even 10 seems high to me.
It's a long time.
I mean, if we're changing out presidents, trying to every 4 years, it seems like maybe 8 years. So you could work two presidential terms and then it changes.
Yeah. And it doesn't overlap. Mm-hmm. So you're not necessarily ideologically aligned. Well, and people have been not talking about term limits with Congress members because Mitch McConnell, by the way, over a month, we still haven't seen his corpse.
Hundo P. Hundo P has left this planet.
Go back and go, if you're listening to this in 2027, you're like, yeah, he died on June 14th when they came to his house and they've lied to us for an entire month. I think that will come out. Josh Hawley, who's a Republican senator out of Missouri, Ted Cruz, all of them are answering questions like, I don't know where he is, but I definitely am in favor of term limits. And it's a wonderful thing to hear bipartisan agreement that we should not have 950-year-old people holding us all hostage on a ventilator somewhere.
It's telling of what's really happening. Yeah. When Ted Cruz comes out and he's like, yeah, I don't think we should. Well, why? Because you actively know what is happening right now with Mitch McConnell. Is that why you changed your mind?
He's this man should have been limited. what is happening? And I'm like, Ted Cruz is the voice of reason? Oh, shit. Oh, no, man. We've gone far afield.
When SCOTUS blogs Jake Trescott and Adam Feldman released their end-of-term stat pack analysis on July 1st, the numbers pointed in two directions at once. Sharper ideological polarization alongside a stubborn strain of consensus.
Well, before we break the numbers down, too, we'll let you all know kind of what the Supreme Court can issue. They can issue an opinion, which is usually the decision of the court. The majority opinion will be the official ruling of the court. That's the binding law. It's usually 5 out of 9. Usually, ideally, you would like 9 out of 9 to everyone is agreeing. But as long as it's at least a majority, that becomes a majority opinion. A concurrence or a concurring opinion is usually written by a justice who agrees with the outcome, but has a nitty extra explanation, or they want to add something to say, well, I would have decided it this way, but they get there the same way. It doesn't change the ruling, but it can hint at future legal arguments. Similar, you can concur in the judgment, but be a dissent in the reasoning or agree in the reasoning, all that. There's all different ones. Then dissenting opinion is a justice who totally disagrees with the outcome, votes the other way. It has no legal force. But as we see in this term, what was once a dissent 10, 20, 30 years ago has become the framework by which now that they're in charge, they're like, my buddy said this years ago. Or even if you're Justice Thomas, I said this years ago.
Yeah.
And then suddenly that becomes law. So you can also have concurring in part, dissenting in part, yada, yada. But you see the reasoning why certain factions of the court, more conservative or more progressive factions, might want to side together or might just end up siding together because they see the issues the same way.
Yeah. Because they're not so beholden to their own party that they refuse to see the good in something.
Yeah, sometimes it's like throwing the law to the side because you kind of know the outcome. So you're trying to twist the law to make it fit the outcome. And that's when you'll see it's a decision along ideological lines, or it's an ideological split. And that word split usually just means how the vote counts. 6-3, a 5-4 split. So those are kind of the terms that you'll hear when discussing this.
There were strict 6-3 ideological splits, all 6 Republican appointees against all 3 Democratic appointees. These jumped from 9% of decisions last term to 22.7% this term, while overall 6-3 votes rose from 15.2% to 28.8%. The liberal justices also closed ranks more often, dissenting together in 24.2% of cases, up from 15% last term. Yet the closing weeks complicated that story. In the second to last week, 7 of 9 decisions split 6-3 along ideological lines. But in the final week, only 4 of 7 did, with all 3 liberal justices landing in the majority in the outliers rather than dissenting at the margins. Despite the sharper splits, unanimity actually ticked up slightly to 44%. This means nearly as many cases were decided without dissent as were decided along the sharpest ideological lines.
Those are pretty big jumps. So it went from the 6-3 cases used to be around 10%, and now they're over 20%. That's big. And overall, this big 6-3 votes, where it's now the basically just an ideological line, is almost 30% of cases.
Yeah. So what does that tell us?
I mean, what we'll see is as we go through these is it seems as if the majority of conservative justices are what has been called by experts a captured court, which is a court that appears to be, and this is not my idea, by the way, this is the professor who's the expert in autocratic governments and democratic backsliding from Princeton, who called it a captured court. And it's a court that looks legitimate. Maybe sometimes there's other splits. For instance, the last week, the Trump, one of the cases was 5-4 with Justice Roberts and Kavanaugh are joining the 3 liberals. Another one was Kagan with Kavanaugh and the 3 liberals. So it's they're able to cross party lines sometimes, but then when you look at what those cases are, they're kind of throwing him a bone almost. Mm-hmm. And we'll discuss capture courts at the end, but I think that's the jump and split just shows you like, no, it's not your imagination. They are going with whatever is politically expedient mm-hmm. in multiple of these cases.
Chief Justice Roberts again wrote the fewest opinions of any justice, 6 majority opinions and no separate writings at all, no concurrences or dissents, while remaining a fixture of the majority coalition. He and Kavanaugh led the court in majority vote frequency at 95% each, with Barrett close behind at 92%.
Followers, they're always trying to go with who's women.
Justice Clarence Thomas was the court's most prolific writer for the second straight year, authoring 28 total opinions, down slightly from 29 last term, including a term-high 15 concurrences. His writing was also unusually lengthy this year. His longest dissent ran roughly double the length of his longest the term before, and the case it belonged to became the term's longest combined decision by a wide margin.
My response to Justice Thomas is that meme that says, I ain't reading all that. I'm happy for you, though, or sorry for that happened. His dissent in Trump v. Barbara was 91 pages long.
I just have zero respect for anyone that is still in this position after sexually harassing a woman. I mean, I remember that so vividly. The pubic hair on the Coke can, it became this huge joke. It was all mm-hmm. over SNL. It's one of those things that at the time you're like, oh, this is so funny. And now looking back, you're like, how horrific and even more horrific that he is still in a position of power and is writing the most of any of them.
Yeah, he's making his feelings known. I wonder, I'm like, are you getting ready to retire? Are you sick? Like, what's going on? Why are you writing
Fingers
this
crossed.
Prolifically? Yeah, I mean, overall. And there's you're right, not just the sexual harassment of it all, the I mean, I don't want to say illegal fund receipt from his wife, but his wife received a lot of money from insider, Trump insider, January 6th connections. I mean, I think his wife's connections alone are disqualifying in most of his work, but somehow he's still there. I think it's hard to get rid of a Supreme Court justice, which again, I think we need to see in future mm-hmm. Court reform that it is easier to remove.
I've never understood how anyone can be appointed for life. That seems so myopic. I mean, do people not grow? Do opinions of even these people not change? You know what I mean? So it's just, you got to get some fresh blood in there. It's like even at the PTA, you roll off after 2 years of being in that position, you know?
It's a good point. No, I mean, I think it's a good point, and you're right. It certainly would calcify perhaps a feeling of untouchability that you think, whatever. Like, he's been on the court that long. He got through that initial hurdle of being a possible, potentially, I believe he probably was a sexual abuser and still became a Supreme Court justice and then, like, still gets to keep his job.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel good.
Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson led the court in dissents for the second consecutive term, writing 10. She also remained the justice least often in the majority, 67% of the time overall and just 41% in non-unanimous cases, continuing a pattern from last term, 72% and 51%, respectively.
I will never accept anybody besmirching the name of Ketanji Brown Jackson. I think her dissents will lead us out of this. I think her, Kagan, and Sotomayor are, as much as they can, as best as they can, trying to lay for us maps of they're deciding it this way. Here are the ways to fix it. Or here are interpretations that would have gotten you a different thing. Or here are perhaps, now granted, Kavanaugh and the others for Trump, when they're like, you lost, but here's how you could really get around it. They're sort of doing the same thing. But it's Ketanji Brown Jackson is what gives me the most hope just in my life in general and every day. Because it's a person who says, no, I see clearly with both of my eyes what's happening. And I'm going to say with my whole chest what's happening. And I'm not going to just go with the majority. Or go with that. The cheese stands alone.
And they're basically saying, hey, when you all decide to unfuck this, here's how you can do that.
Yeah. And let's just say historically, she was not wrong. It's the same people that dissented in like the most horrific cases we've ever had. The Korematsus, the Dred Scotts, the Brown v. Boards of it. You know, anytime you've had a case that then 10, 20, 50 years later, you go, duh.
Yeah.
We should have had that all along. Mm-hmm. And it's like, she's the one that has the courage of convictions to continually be in that current minority position that I think is the logical position in most cases.
Mm-hmm. Overall, opinion output was nearly flat year over year. 164 total opinions this term, 66 majority, 54 concurrences, 44 dissents, versus 165 the term before, with 67 majority, 50 concurrences, and 48 dissents.
So it's just ticking up in small ways that I think we'll see through these cases what it means.
An early loss for the Trump administration came in February. Learning Sources, Inc. v. Trump decided 6-3, held that the International Emergency Economic Powers Act does not authorize the president to unilaterally impose tariffs. The case resulted in a splintered set of six opinions, exposing a real fracture among the court's conservatives. The ruling invalidated tariffs worth well over $100 billion and potentially unlocked massive refunds, though it left the actual repayment mechanics unresolved. While it was called a loss for the administration, the decision prompted Trump to immediately pivot to Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974 to reimpose tariffs through a different statutory route.
And that's kind of one of three ways that a captured court can help out an autocrat in charge, which is to give him time. In this case, he had the tariffs in February of 2025, and it took a whole year for the Supreme Court to say, well, actually, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, in the interim, his attorneys were helping the president figure out different laws, different mechanisms by which to just do the same thing. So it looks like a loss, and it's called a loss on paper, but in reality, it was let's hold it back until he's ready.
Yeah, just kicking the can down the road.
That's what it seemed like. And again, we take a loss where we can get one for an autocrat, but in this case, it's kind of a loss in name only.
A false loss.
Yeah, it's a fake one.
It's a loss on paper.
Yeah, because I heard on the radio about Canada's subject to a 50% tariff from the U.S. That's like a new tariff, and it's throwing businesses like into turmoil. And I was like, but I thought he lost the tariff case. Sinister Hood, we'll be right back. I tell you what, if I am at all uncomfortable, I wake up. I'm like a light sleeper. So if I'm too sweaty, if I'm too scratchy, I'm too itchy, I'm too... like, I feel like something is holding me down. I can't take it. But sleeping hot has got to be like my number one thing. Mm-hmm. And it is right now. I think they said it's the hottest it's been in the last 2 years. We're in the triple digits. It's going to be in the triple digits for like another week. And the only way I'm sleeping sound. I mean, I conked out my fan going on me. I slipped my feet into my Boll & Branch sheets. And that is what takes me out, baby.
Oh, man. After I do all my lotions and potions and I put my... get all into that. Last night, I specifically was like, my feet feel so cool, and I'm slipping them down my Bolin Branch mist sheets under my mist duvet with my Bolin Branch pillows and everything Bolin Branch, my waffle blanket. It's all, yeah, I have layers so I can
take them off, put them on.
Yeah. And what do I want to do tonight? But even if I have all the layers, I'm still sleeping cool.
Every time, man. The thing about the Bolin Branch, the cooling is structural. They weave the cotton. So there's not a bunch of, they don't put a bunch of junk on it and treat it with something. And it feels like it gets softer with every wash. It has for mine.
Absolutely.
Sleep cooler this summer with Bolin Branch. Get 15% off your first order plus free shipping at bolinbranch.com/creepy with code creepy.
That's Bolin Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com/creepy, code creepy, to unlock 15% off. Bolinbranch.com/creepy, code creepy. Exclusions apply. The term saw two major immigration decisions. In a fractured 6-3 decision, Trump v. Barbara struck down the president's executive order that sought to deny automatic citizenship to children born in the U.S. to undocumented or temporarily present parents. Chief Justice Roberts' majority held that the 14th Amendment's citizenship clause guarantees birthright citizenship regardless of parents' immigration status. Kavanaugh's concurrence offered a possible path forward for the administration, writing,
Congress could enact new legislation establishing exceptions to birthright citizenship for children born to foreign citizens unlawfully or temporarily in the country, but Congress has not yet done so.
President Trump already said he wants the Supreme Court to hear the case again, so this fight might not be over.
And this was the big issue with the birthright citizen executive order, where basically Trump decided that if you were born here, but your mother was not present lawfully and the father is not a citizen or lawful permanent residence, or if the mother's presence was lawful but temporary and the father wasn't a citizen, that you're, but the 14th Amendment is very clear that if you are born here, period, you are a citizen here. Yeah. And so this kind of decision is scary because it's a 6-3 decision, but really it's only 5-4 on the very narrow constitutional issue, which is to say, under the Constitution, we believe that if you're born here, you are a citizen. Justice Kavanaugh only concurred to say, well, yeah, but also if Congress wanted to make a law that said these things, then those people would not be citizens. Mm-hmm. So again, this is a different way that the Princeton professor gave for captured courts to let an autocrat get out of jail free, which is, well, you can't do it with an executive order, but you can pressure Congress and have them do it, which is what he and J.D. Vance are really gunning for. Like gunning bad for this, for a congressional law that would rescind birthright citizenship.
No, I just think that's so wild, given J.D. Vance is married to a woman of color. It just blows my mind.
Yeah, I mean, he went on Fox News to pressure the base with this decision, saying the midterms are extremely important because it's the senators who vote on the Supreme Court justices. Imagine if one of the five justices who made a bad call today, if they left the Supreme Court, we want to make sure we get somebody good on there in the future. Mm-hmm. And so commentators have been saying, much like with Roe v. Wade, where someone who was but someone who's in consideration to be a justice was asked, you know, do you think that abortion is settled law? Do you think Roe v. Wade is settled law? And they all fucking dog. Because they didn't really, or they lied in their confirmations. I think the new question, I would agree with multiple commentators that the new question is going to be like, do you think the 14th Amendment settled law, or do you think Congress could, you know, get around it? Because man, 5-4 for our constitutional right is crazy. It's so thin.
If they had it their way, I think they'd rewrite the whole thing. And it's just such a waste of time, in my opinion, to revisit these things that have already been written. We've already done it. And that's how we've all been living. So why are we? Well, I'll tell you why. It's all because they want this country to just be a bunch of white Christian nationalists. So they're undoing everything they did. Again, if you had term limits, it would be much harder to convince people of this.
No, you're absolutely right. And especially, this is the 14th Amendment. This was passed in 1868 after the Civil War. And with the express intent of granting to formerly enslaved individuals the rights of the Constitution. So it's a shame that we continually see history repeating itself. But I mean, citizenship is a big part of that, as well as due process, equal protection. And all of those were touched by different cases this term that makes you nervous in a, it's not crazy to be nervous about, because it's the Constitution's biggest promise of fairness and they're fighting over it so much.
Yeah. Yeah, truly. And then I think, man, if they didn't, if they weren't trying to undo this, think of all the stuff we could get done. If they just focused on new things that need to happen to better the country, man, we'd get a whole lot done.
I mean, so many of these cases are like, we could have really been collaborative on this. Mm-hmm. And instead, nope.
Let's, never.
The most destructive version.
Simon likes to tell me, never. So dramatic. Simon, you need to go pick up your clothes. Never.
Never surrender. I like it.
The second immigration case, Mullen v. Doe, also decided 6-3, held that the Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, statute bars courts from reviewing nearly all challenges to the Trump administration's termination of temporary protected status for roughly 350,000 Haitians and 6,000 Syrians. Alito's majority determined that courts cannot review the process and final decisions by the DHS secretary regarding those with TPS. The court also rejected Haitian plaintiffs' equal protection claim that the termination of their status was racially motivated, finding race-neutral explanations for arguably racist statements made by Trump and former DHS Secretary Kristi Noem.
So you have this law that says you're the Department of Homeland Security head. If you think that something is very dangerous and unsafe in a country, war, disaster, et cetera, an earthquake, for instance, in Haiti, political corruption, gang violence that resulted therefrom, you can say, if you're from this place, we will give you temporary protected status for whatever time. The statute has language in there that talks about reviewing this determination and what steps that the DHS secretary has to do, like including talking with the State Department. Hey, have things gotten better in Haiti before we send all these folks back? Or have things gotten better in Syria? They have not, by the way. And the State Department in both cases say, do not travel to these places. And instead, the 6-3 majority said, well, we don't think that it's up to the courts to review what a DHS secretary does. So we think any of the decisions with regards to the TPS statute is out of the purview of judicial review based on this, our definition of this language that's used. And separately, the Haitians who argued, hey, these statements were racist. Donald Trump said we're poisoning the blood of the country. Ugh. Like, hang on a minute. The majority said, well, first of all, those aren't racist.
You're like, so, I believe if the person that said it is a known racist, proudly one, then we can say it's racist.
Yeah, I mean, they said, well, it's not that Donald Trump and Kristi Noem are racist against non-white people.
No, it is.
It's that they hate all immigrants. They literally said, it's not overtly racist. It's just an expressed policy view that could rest on race-neutral justifications. Now, the dissent had something to say about it, but it was crazy to me to read the majority, and I was just like, did you hurt your back twisting around to make this up?
And it's like, whoa, we don't hate just one type of brown person. We hate them all. So
yeah, don't
we
worry,
can't be racist because it's equal for everybody that isn't white.
It was crazy to me for being like, it's race neutral. They hate immigrants except those from Norway and Sweden.
But that's
not racist. It's just their policy.
Yeah. Germans, you're welcome to come on over.
Bananas. Bananas that they said that. It's crazy.
Kagan's dissent, joined by Sotomayor and Jackson, rejected the majority's sweeping reading of the statute and sharply disputed the race neutral characterization. Writing.
The evidence is there, plain to see in the president's statements, which the majority and, for that matter, his own lawyers cannot even bear to repeat.
She noted that Trump's statements were
so repellent and racially inflected that the majority declines to put them in print.
Kagan then reproduced several of Trump's statements herself, including
they're eating the dogs, they're eating the cats,
and Trump's description of Haiti as
a shithole country.
Alongside Noem's characterization of TPS holders as
they're leeches, they're entitlement junkies, and they're foreign invaders.
I like the nose pinch for that one.
I was trying to get in character. I did not want to get so in character that I shot a dog, some in character. No, it's, I think Justice Kagan gave two of these, maybe. She's like, oh, it isn't racist? Okay, just for the record, let's go ahead and put in there what he said. And people in 5 to 10 to 50 years can see what type, just exactly what type of guy our president was.
They're going to see in so many ways the type of president he was. And long after he's gone, people are just going to piss on his grave for eternity. I mean, he's going to be right up there with Hitler. I mean, proudly Mussolini. So for him. Yeah, just like this terrible world leader that was on this power trip and was determined to take everyone down with him.
I'll be the loudest bitch until I die in 2100, because I was like, I'll live forever and I'll tell the story. I'll tell it again and again. But I think you're right. And I'm glad that Justice Kagan put that in there to mark it for the record of like, they're saying that these statements are race neutral and they won't even fucking type them. Here, I'll type them for you. Mm-hmm. They're awful. Copy and paste. And Justice Thomas, for his part in the concurrence, wrote, I don't think aliens have any equal protection rights against the government at all. So again, one of those, you guys were being shitty, I'd have done further. I'd have kicked them too while they were down, because this is going to result in, I mean, thousands of people being sent to very dangerous places. There's 1.3 million TPS holders from 17 different countries so far. Just from those from Syria and Haiti are affected. But Justice Kagan said, respectfully, I dissent from this decision that these beneficiaries are going to be put on the next plane.
Yeah. Across three consecutive late June rulings, all decided 6-3, the court took on the Bill of Rights. Its decisions were expansive on the Second and Fourth Amendments, but narrow when it came to actually holding officials accountable under the First Amendment. Wolford v. Lopez was a 6-3 decision striking down Hawaii's, quote, vampire rule, which required gun owners to get a property owner's express consent before carrying a firearm onto private property open to the public.
I love that it's called the vampire rule, but it is.
Why?
Because a vampire can't come without invitation.
That is true.
And so their law that they wanted to make was you can't enter into a private property without invitation, no matter what, if you had a gun. So instead of it being, okay, individual business owners have to put up a sign that says, if you have a weapon, you can't come here. We as Hawaii want to say, unless a business owner puts a sign that says, if you have a gun, come on in, you should assume you can't take a gun anywhere in Hawaii on private property. Private property owners can change that if they want, but we, Hawaii, want to make a default no guns.
I like it. But yeah, and anytime a mythical creature crosses over into actual court decisions and we're going to have something on paper called the vampire rule, I'm a fan of. Let us all have one.
Team vampire rule. What the hell? Why are we striking this down?
Alito's majority held the law.
Hobbles what the Second Amendment protects.
While rejecting Hawaii's reliance on a Louisiana Black Code era statute as historical justification. The ruling immediately put similar laws in California, Maryland, New York, and New Jersey at risk, while leaving intact property owners' ability to still ban guns via posted signage and leaving sensitive places like schools untouched.
I mean, the practical effect is that it means the gun owner has a right to enter a business with a weapon unless told otherwise. So that's a thing that we all have to know.
Like, shouldn't the default be, no, we don't allow that. And if you're an exception to the rule, which should be the exception, which means the minority, then you put a sign on your door that says, yes, if you have a gun, you're welcome here. But it shouldn't be on the onus shouldn't be on a business owner to have to manage that and police that.
I would agree. And I think when you said the onus shouldn't be on a business owner to manage and police that's a business owner managing their property right. And in her dissent, shout out to KBJ's dissent coming through as always, she pointed out the law does not implicate the Second Amendment, by the way, because there's no constitutional right to enter private property without the owner's permission, let alone with a gun.
Yeah.
So this is a private property law that happens to, you know, it mentions guns, but it does not implicate, you're not allowed to carry a gun anywhere ever as far as the Second Amendment. And she said, basically, interesting to see my colleagues are now free to insert any meaning they desire into the text of the Second Amendment and then demand the government provide analogs to fit the interpretation. Like, basically, we're all reading the same text. You guys are making a bunch of shit up. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't fit at all. But yeah, go off, I guess. So again, another wonderful dissent from KBJ. Sinisterhood will be right back. This episode of Sinisterhood is brought to you by Alloy Health. Dealing with menopause alone, it's not just you. Almost 50% of women wait 3 or more years before seeking relief from menopause symptoms. That's years of hot flashes, awful sleep, brain fog, and mood swings. Some don't know where to start. Some asked a doctor and got dismissed. Menopause happens. The suffering does not have to.
Oh my goodness gracious. In the copy here, it says, Christy, talk about your own experience with menopause symptoms. And I will. I mean, perimenopause, it's terrible. Yeah, it's been like, I don't know, a year or something. You literally can start getting them in your mid-30s, and they can last until your mid-60s. And I never knew that. I always was like, mm-hmm. Oh, perimenopause is something that happens right before menopause. And that happens mm-hmm. like in your late 60s. Well, I was completely wrong. And I'm on multiple group chats with moms that are like going through the same thing, because we lean on each other to know like mm-hmm. tips and tricks, or just like, did you experience this? Because much like most of women's health, it isn't talked about. And like, no one educates you on this. And then you go to your doctor to try and find out what's going on. And they're like, yeah, we don't really know. Here's some stuff. Nobody's tested this. So we don't really know. So you're kind of just yeah. on your own. You're like, cool. Well, I can't think of a sentence to form because I have so much brain fog, but I'll go and figure out how to yeah. take care of all of this
I'll
myself.
Solve this thing. Nothing, no doctors have solved it, but I got
yeah,
this.
Yeah, well, I got Alloy, it. Don't worry.
Well, Alloy was built by women who dealt with all of it. Mm-hmm. It's an all-in-one platform that connects you with board-certified menopause-specialized physicians and proven effective treatment. Your care can start in hours, not weeks. 95% of Alloy HRT customers feel symptom relief within the first 2 weeks. Treatment comes in formats that work for you, whether patch, pill, spray, or gel. It's personalized to your symptoms, your history, and your routine.
Alloy solutions are available by prescription, so you'll start with a quick online form. Then you get your prescription. You'll be matched with a menopause specialized physician who reviews your intake and creates a personalized treatment plan tailored to your needs. Plus, unlimited messaging with your doctor is always included. And HRT delivered to your door. Once approved, your prescription ships straight to you. No pharmacy, no hassle. You're already dealing with all these menopausal symptoms. You don't need any more of that. Mm-mm. Alloy is the way to go.
Join the 95% of women who tried Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code SINISTER. Your menopause specialized doctor will tailor your treatment to your exact needs. Plus, you get unlimited messaging with your doctor. Head to myalloy.com and use code SINISTER to get $20 off.
Chatry v. U.S. was a 6-3 decision holding that police conducted a Fourth Amendment, quote, search when they used a geofence warrant to obtain Google location history data that helped identify a bank robbery suspect. Kagan's majority ruled that the individuals retain
a reasonable expectation of privacy
in their cell phone location data, even when a third party holds it.
And kind of the argument initially was, well, you gave your information to Google, so you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy anymore. Do you feel that way? I don't. I have the internet, but I have an expectation that my messages that go over the internet are private, or I pay a phone plan. My calls are private.
My expectation is that, but I don't believe that. I think everything is read and cameras are everywhere.
No, 100%. I'm sorry. I mean, a reasonable expectation of privacy against an unlawful search and seizure by the government.
Yeah. Thank
you. I'm like, come back with a warrant, right? I think me telling Google my location is not the same as me going, and Google, by the way, if you want to tell them, you can. Now, do the terms of service say that? Certainly, they usually say that Google will comply with all lawful demands from the government. I think that that should mean a warrant. And this case now says, when with regards to your location history, they should get a warrant. Otherwise, it's more similar to general warrants, which is what they used to have in colonial days, where they'd pretty much go, we think a crime happened, so we just need to dig through your house to figure out what the crime is. And the framers specifically went, we don't like those. And that's why the Fourth Amendment says you got to specifically say, what are you looking for? What are you going to look in? And Gorsuch, in his concurrence, said private data, which I'm surprised that Gorsuch concurred in this, but he said private data and location history qualifies as personal property. So in the Fourth Amendment, it says your effects and papers. We now know that we have fewer papers. We have digital papers, right? Our emails, but like that should all be covered. So this is like a rare, very good decision that we got this time. That it's good job, guys. Did one good. Congratulations. Let me finish on doing your job.
Meanwhile, Landor v. Louisiana Department of Corrections, decided the same week, showed the limits of constitutional protection once a right is actually violated. Prison guards forcibly shaved a Rastafarian inmate's head, despite him showing them a court ruling protecting his right to keep his hair. The court held the inmate cannot sue those individual officers for damages based on the law supposedly protecting him. The language and nature of the federal statute mean only the state itself, not its individual employees,
voluntarily and knowingly consented to be sued.
This is, man, it's sickening. They took so much pleasure in doing that, you know?
I think so. He had not cut his hair in 20 years, they said. He was 3 weeks away from completing his prison sentence when he got transferred to a new place. And when he was transferred, he handed him the paper. They threw it in the trash, carried him in the other room, handcuffed him, and shaved him bald.
That's horrible.
And that is traumatic.
Yeah.
That's especially religiously traumatic. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes me think of the Amish.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just completely unnecessary. 3 weeks away, you said? I mean, 3 weeks. You can't live with his hair being like this for 3 weeks when he already has a written piece of paper. And this is one of many problems with the prison system, but he's transferred prisons, so the rules change. So, I mean, just for consistency for inmates, for employees, and the law, why don't we have it be, you know, everybody, we all adhere to this. We all see this piece of paper and go, okay, yeah, we can't do that.
Well, and that's kind of the issue, is that you have this Religious Protection Act that says any state jails that accept federal funds has to respect the religious preferences, or, you know, the situations like this for inmates. And the jail did respect it, but the employees didn't. So then the Supreme Court said, well, the jail said that it would be subject to this religious thing, but these employees never agreed that they would be sued. So,
but you work for the jail.
What? They do? Hold on a minute. Oh, that's why their shirts say Department of Corrections on it. Yeah, no, it's like very, it's a real dumb answer.
That's like, hey, you're a lawyer at that law firm, right? But you don't have to keep any of your client's secrets, right? That's just the law firm keeps the secrets, but you can tell me everything about them.
I'm like, what do you think? The jail has a mouth and it's going to be talking? Like, what are you talking about? But it's like, this is a federal statute that says if you take these funds, then you're subject to this law. Then you're subject to that law. But the majority goes, well, unless they haven't consented to it. And so, again, Justice Jackson's dissent was like, I'm sorry, what now? Yeah. Like, this is just an invitation that they can decline or accept. What the fuck is the point of federal law?
That's a great question. It seems That's like it's question. Just for smoke and mirrors and shits and giggles.
I mean, you have this law technically on the books, and if you go to jail and your religious rights are impugned upon the individual officers, if you work at a correctional facility right now, you could make a Muslim inmate eat pork. You could take a Christian inmate's Bible and wipe your ass with it in front of them. You could take a Jewish inmate's yarmulke and throw it in the trash. And I mean, you could do and just go, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
We don't like people like you here and how you practice and pray here. We don't like you. Okay, well, I would like to sue you now. Good luck. You can't.
Yeah. You can sue the prison, but not me. And it's like, oh, well, okay, I'll sue the jail. Well, they didn't do anything wrong. The individual did. And you can't sue the individual. Am I taking crazy pills?
Yeah. It's just like, snip, snap, snip, snap, snip, snap.
And it, and I mean, it's of course by design to just be an endless loop of nothing.
Well, and it's, I don't want a court and I don't want to support a court and I don't want my tax dollars to pay a court that's entire, the breadth of these decisions boil down to, what are you going to do about it? You nobody, you fucking nobody, poor fucking nobody. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. You can't. That's what it feels like.
Yeah.
That if you're rich, that if you're an elected, the executive of the leader of the free world, do whatever you want. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You got this. You got this. But poors, oh, no, no. You don't have rights here. Go back to your country and die there.
Yeah.
And let me shave your head first.
Yep. That's the American way.
Right now, though.
Jackson's dissents in both Lander and Wolford suggest a notable through line. The court is willing to read individual rights broadly in the abstract while narrowing the practical avenues for enforcing or checking them. The court protected the right to carry a gun onto someone else's property and the privacy of a phone's location history, while it closed the door on a prisoner seeking damages for a religious rights violation that prison officials admitted had happened. Nearly a century of regulatory law was upended with two cases, Trump v. Slaughter and Trump v. Cook, handed down within minutes of each other on June 29th. In Slaughter, a 6-3 majority overruled the court's 91-year-old decision in Humphrey's executor, which prevented the president from removing FTC commissioners without reason. That 1935 case held that the FTC was not under his purview as a quasi-legislative and quasi-judicial agency.
They be throwing quasi in front of stuff, and it's
yeah, and I mean,
hard to say.
Could I say that right? No, because it's that quasi judicial. Judicial is a hard word for me to say. Period. So
it's sorry, there's too everybody. Many eyes. No, there's too many eyes in that. But so this has been the law for a long time, and this has been one of the laws that the right hates. They hate it. They don't want you to be able to regulate. Oh, I don't know, diarrhea and lettuce, or insider trading, or what's fraudulent, which is what the FTC files lawsuits on behalf of the federal government against businesses that defraud its citizens. And up until now, for the last 91 years, those were all fairly independent, as so far as the president just couldn't come in and yavayed. They had to say, hey, we've noticed that you stopped coming to work, or that you you're nude in the office. Like, we need you to, you know what I mean? You can't do that here. We got to let you go. But in this case, just when Trump came into office, he took the two Democrats and was like, you're out.
And again, it's the, what are you going to do about it? And yeah, I mean, the answer is nothing right now. I'm going to have to dissent and write a bunch of concurrences and laws that years from now hopefully will change things. But you're right. Right this second, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah, it's what it feels like. And I mean, the FTC Act, which is the law that created the Federal Trade Commission or agency itself, says they can be removed for inefficiency, neglect of duty, or malfeasance. And Trump just went, I have the rights as the executive. I get to do this. And he was challenging this specifically to get rid of this law, Humphrey's executor, which is kind of the only law that kept these agencies semi-independent. And it is gone now.
Yeah. Like, just like you said, the diarrhea law. If we can have the vampire law, let's have the diarrhea law.
This is the diarrhea lettuce decision.
Instead, the majority has now declared,
if anything more is left of Humphreys, we overrule it,
and cleared the way for Trump to fire FTC Commissioner Rebecca Slaughter and others like her without cause. Sotomayor's dissent warned, the holding hands the president
a power unknown even to the English crown, against which the founders revolted, elevating him above his once co-equal branches by transforming a duty to take care that the laws be faithfully executed into a license to act in defiance of those very laws.
The decision puts the National Labor Relations Board, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, the Securities Exchange Commission, and dozens of other agencies on notice of the president's new sweeping power.
I mean, there's a famous constitutional law scholar named Edwin Chemerinsky, and he just said, agency independence is now gone. And I always like when someone who's way more experienced than me, I'm like, it seems like there's no independent agencies anymore. There are not.
Yeah.
There are not. Now it means the president controls the SEC, and the question then became, can he fire civil servants who are employees under these agencies? And he is starting to try to test that. And it's weird that Congress can create an agency with the law and say, under this law, these are the ways to fire someone. And then the president just acts on top of, outside of, over that. And then the court goes, yeah, he can do that.
It's fine.
And you're like, you're fucking co-equal branches. What are you talking
about?
What's
the point of anything?
Just read the fucking statute. It says he can't do that.
Doesn't anybody give a shit about the rules anymore? I'm about to Walter Sobchak this entire fucking administration.
I mean, it feels like the dissent in this case, well, any of the like Sotomayor, Kagan, Jackson dissents are always like that. They're Walter Sobchaks of like, does no one care?
What is happening?
I mean, truly. And even since that decision, Trump has fired two or three members off, and it was like some election. Oh, man, I wish I remember the name. It's like the EAC or something, but it's a very unheard of agency that helps. Oh, I don't know. Ensure that elections are done fairly. And he just fired a bunch of people and is going to hire his friends. Weird. And you don't think that, you know what? I don't think that that's what anybody was contemplating when framing what the president's powers were.
No, it kind of defeats the entire purpose, actually.
It really does. It really does.
The Cook case was decided on a much narrower 5-4 coalition, with Roberts and Kavanaugh breaking from their fellow conservatives to join the court's three liberals. The decision blocked Trump from firing Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook, insisting the Fed's unique historical design demands real process before removal.
Not at any time for any reason, without any notice before, and without any judicial check after. So it's very confusing that these are two of the exact same situations, and the only difference is the underlying agency, and that the Federal Reserve is, according to the majority, and more important. That's literally the reason.
Yeah.
They just go, this one's more important.
Well,
and you go like, but why though? And they go, because of money.
Because money rules all. And we all answer to the same boss. And that's really all he cares about.
Truly. And I don't love her for a lot of reasons. But Amy Coney Barrett, at the very least, in the dissent in Cook, said, this holding is in serious tension with the Trump v. Slaughter, which we also decided today. How can history support both a categorical rule and a carve out? And like, at least somebody noticed she works for them. So they probably should have decided that before, you know, they printed all the opinions. But
it truly is like banging your head against the wall if you work there and you're on the right side. I mean, how they don't all just throw up their hands and papers and walk out every day is beyond me.
No, I mean, it's, yeah, I think it really has become an ideological court where they knew that if you gave Trump unilateral ability to randomly fire a Fed governor, which for those of you who don't know, the Federal Reserve sets interest rates and can, you know, they have a thing called quantitative easing where they can kind of mess with the interest rates to help like infuse the country with cash or not. And they have a major lever to help the U.S. economy. And when Trump is fucking the economy up, he was telling them like, hey, pull those levers so the economy doesn't look as bad. And Lisa Cook said, no, she's in fact the first Black woman to ever be elected a governor of the Federal Reserve, and said, no, this is not in the best interest of the American people. This will hurt the economy. I'm not going to do it. And he was like, well, I don't know, a couple years ago, I think maybe you checked a box wrong on your paper and maybe that's mortgage fraud and maybe you should get fired for that. And thankfully, the Supreme Court was like, listen, it's going to fuck the whole economy up if we let this wackadoo just like fire anybody from the Fed. So let's just go. He can fire anybody he wants except from the Fed. It's like a kid
yeah.
where you go like, you can do anything except this one thing. You just give them, appease them with other things so they actually don't do the one thing you don't want them to do.
Yeah. It's a give a mouse a cookie situation too, though. And he's never satisfied.
He's not. And he was pissed off that he couldn't. He said on Truth Social that, oh, it's strictly procedural and we're going to continue our mortgage fraud investigation and continue his quest to get her removed. So again, it's just another decision that's ideologically flimsy and shows that this court is, in a very simple term, bullshit.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just wild. It's so embarrassing. And I mean, at this point, we've said this so many times, but really, like every day, it's so embarrassing to see the president just kick his tiny little feet, kick rocks, you know, just be upset because I don't get to fire everybody. I only get to fire a couple people. Bitch, you ain't in charge of everything. Okay. Like no president ever has been, nor should they ever be.
Like you said, that's not what the framers wanted and the founders of this country. Why on God's green fucking earth should you be any different when, in fact, you're the worst president we've ever had and you want to do all of the things? And that's another reason he is the worst president, because it's not about what's best for the people. It's about what's best for him. Really, only he cares about himself. Maybe a handful of people. I don't know. I really don't think he gives a shit about anybody but himself. Maybe setting up his family to be billionaires forever. But he doesn't care about the people. And it's so apparent every single day. And then when you have a justice that is a Republican break party, it's even more glaring that, like, hello, this is a terrible idea. Like, the people that you appointed that are on your side even say that this is a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm like, when they're raising their hands going, you guys, we're going to look like fucking idiots if we do this.
Like, this is embarrassing. I don't even want to be a like part of this party anymore. And you're like, you're right. It is embarrassing. Yeah. And you should be embarrassed.
So I'm like, just have a fucking backbone. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, at least she said that and had a dissent and everything. But I think she would have said he can fire the Federal Reserve Board of, you know. And so she and I agree only insofar as, like, these cases are diametrically opposed to one another. She's like, yeah, he should have been able to go further. And I'm like, wait, no.
Yeah, yeah. But so embarrassing. And I mean, I don't know that they even are self-aware enough to realize how embarrassing it is and how contradictory these things are. And you're handing them down within minutes of each other, and just how sloppy that makes you look to your country and all countries.
Well, and you're right. And I think it's much like the folks that are testifying before Congress and they get asked, like, who won the 2020 election? Mm-hmm. And they won't
answer it. They're like, I'm not doing this with you. Answering the fucking question, yes or no. That it's literally a yes or no question. Man, my boyfriend, Senator Ossoff.
Dude, John Ossoff. President Ossoff. Ooh, president
I'd
of
vote
these.
For him. Yeah.
President of this pussy. Sorry. He's a wife guy too. That's like makes him even hotter because he's like loves his wife and is so, you know, like, damn, you gotta be so fine as hell and is so in love with some like nice lady that probably deserves your love too. And you probably got it's like a Barack and Michelle. Mm-hmm. You're like, damn, y'all love each other. Damn. So I think you're right, though. When he asked a question to somebody, like, you know, before we confirm you as a judge, can you just say a simple state of fact of, like, who won the election? And these candidates will be like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to. When they could just say Joe Biden was certified as the winner.
Yeah.
Like, that's like a technical, you know, you're being kind of bitchy about it. But they won't even say it. And then he asks, like, aren't you humiliated? Yeah. The emperor has no clothes. We all know you should be embarrassed. And I think on the balance in history, they will be embarrassed that we'll be able to make just into like huge long cut reel, like just a cut of all these people going, I don't know who won. I don't know who won. But similarly with this, it's like these justices will go down in history as a captured kangaroo court with very pathetically written decisions that, again, scholars that are way smarter than me have gone, this would not pass a law school exam. Mm. Reasoning, like the writing in this is very twisted and bent to fit these whims of a dictator.
Just like niche things that he wants right then, and everyone has to bend over backwards to make happen. And I've given myself a headache, so I'm gonna stop.
I'm just gonna think about John Ossoff. Hang on a minute. Okay. I feel better.
Need to pause. Just kidding, babe. I love you. And Tommy, I also love you.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
I used to feel like makeup meant covering everything up. And really over the past few years, I'm like, no, the prettiest face is one that you just look like an elevated version of yourself. You've got glowy, dewy skin. There's not caking of different things and cracking and things settling in. I was already on the Jones Road Beauty kick before they became a sponsor, specifically because it's made for older skin. It's made for mature skin, and it blends like butter into your skin. It looks so pretty and glowy.
I do not know how I lived without this miracle.
I love
palette.
It.
I have it in my hand. I'm holding it up because that's how much I love it. It stays here in my little makeup bag that I put on the side of the studio because I put it on every show. I use it for my eyes. I use it for a little bit of like blush. I'll put some up here. I'll put a little bit highlighter for the lighter colors. And then I'll use it as a lip tint because mm-hmm. then I feel like I'm cohesive. Oh, and yeah. I'm not cohesive in many things. So thank you, Jones Road, for making me look beautiful and cohesive as we record.
And like you said, you can just throw it in your thing. I throw mine in my bag. So if you're mm-hmm. in the car and you like need a little touch up, mm-hmm. you basically have an entire palette in a tiny little compartment mm-hmm. to do all of your makeup.
Fits in your pocket. Whoop. Right there. No one would even know.
The Miracle Balm. It changed it for me. It doesn't mask your skin. Like I said, it enhances it. You just tap it on with your fingers. You don't even need a brush. Under a minute, you have that effortless glow. It replaces so many steps too. You can have... use it as a blush, a bronzer, a lip tint, like you said. It's all in one.
Yeah, modern day makeup that's clean, strategic, and multifunctional for effortless routines. For a limited time, our listeners are getting a free full-size mascara on their first purchase when they use code CREEPY at checkout. Just head to jonesroadbeauty.com and use code CREEPY at checkout. After your purchase, they will ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them our show sent you.
Together, the pair reveal a court willing to gut a century of independent agency protection everywhere except the one institution it considers too important to touch. As constitutional scholar and professor Erwin Chemerinsky put it,
agency independence is now gone
for the FTC and its peers. The Fed alone survived in what the court treated as a narrow, historically grounded exception. The cases leave Trump with sweeping new removal power over most of the regulatory state, but still requires him to build an actual case before he can touch Federal Reserve governors. In the span of 2 months, the court reshaped nearly every dimension of American election law, though not in a single direction. In Louisiana v. Calais, decided on April 29th, a 6-3 majority gutted Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act by requiring plaintiffs to produce
an alternative map that achieves all the state's objectives, including partisan advantage.
Kagan's dissent warned this standard
renders Section 2 all but dead letter.
The holding triggered immediate chaos, with Louisiana suspending its primaries mid-election and Alabama moving to redraw its own protected map.
So the background on this case has to do with the Voting Rights Act, which is a 1965 law. And Louisiana itself is about one third black. But the old congressional map it had only had 1 out of 6 districts where black voters made up most of the district. So a judge said that likely broke the Voting Rights Act, which is supposed to stop states from drawing maps that make it harder for specific racial groups, but specifically black voters in the case of the VRA, to elect the candidates that they want. So then Louisiana drew a new map with 2 majority black districts. Then a new group sued and said, hey, that's a racial gerrymander and that's unconstitutional, in my opinion, intentionally to gut this law further. This is about the 5th decision that's gutted a once robust law that ensured fair elections has just been weakened and weakened and weakened. And we could do a whole separate episode on that. But this is just kind of one more blow to it. And so it's just made a really tricky standard. So the court didn't just say you can't use race. It said if you're going to argue that the Voting Rights Act requires a district like this to help these voters, you have to prove that there's another way to draw the map that gets everything the state wants, like keeping the incumbents and keeping the old map, and also still creates another majority district. Everybody's like, that's impossible. Yeah. That's like saying like, hey, you're supposed to have a ramp in this building. And they say, okay, we're happy to do that, but you have to tell us how we could build this whole building again and that we don't spend any more money and none of the doors changes and none of the entrances or exits or anything else changes.
But we'll have the ramp, but you got to tell us how to put it in there.
And you have to fund it also. Yeah. Like you have to do all this work. Like people, that's just impossible. So after the ruling, Louisiana had to cancel the primary elections. People had mailed their ballots. It was a whole thing. And then, like we said, you know, Alabama started making decisions a little bit different. Previous to this, the court had done some expedited opinions on Texas maps and things like that. So it's another blow to the Voting Rights Act. And then yet another way for the majority, which in America is in the United States, we're a majority white country. I mean, at this moment, because whiteness is a made up, monolith that we were like, well, you're Italian, you're Irish, you count. but we've created this thing, right? And so this is big beast. And then in order to have a more equitable voting system, we created a law. And then just like year after year after year, we've seen it just cut down. So we need a new, they call it like the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. There's a lot of push. Sexy Senator Ossoff and others are pushing.
Oh, I like that nickname.
They're pushing for new laws that would say, okay, you guys have said for all these reasons, the 1965 law is out and it doesn't serve us anymore. Great. We made a new one. And the new one is, you know, insert all of the things that would bring us an equitable voting system here. But so the Voting Rights Act is pretty much dead. It's pretty much dead.
It's really, it's upsetting. Upsetting, I imagine, for people that can remember when these things went into effect and like your rights changed and now they're still alive to see them taken away.
Yeah. No, I mean, I bet it is gutting for, you know, people always point out that Ruby Bridges is on TikTok, yeah. Which mm-hmm. She's the first girl, that went to the desegregated schools and is the subject of those famous photographs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the idea that we've had these rules before that it's like under the VRA, you had to show like there's enough black voters living together to form a district. They tend to vote as a group. White voters tend to vote as a group against them. Like we show these things. You have a strong case. You can fix a map. Now it's like you have those things. Great. Now you have to make a map that maintains these other things and also fixes the racial problem. And it's just like, I can't do that. And they're like, oh, you can't. I guess you won't change the map then. Mm.
Setting people up to fail.
Yeah.
Then at the very close of the term, the court split off in an unexpected direction on ballots and money. In Watson v. RNC, decided June 29th, a cross-ideological 5-4 majority upheld Mississippi's mail ballot grace period, preserving similar laws in roughly 30 states. This was widely read as a rare election law loss for Republican challengers. The ruling means that ballots postmarked on or before Election Day are valid, even if they physically arrive afterward. In Mississippi's case, up to 5 days later.
This has pissed off Trump. I think my non-legal opinion is that the easiest way to manipulate votes has to do with updates to voting tabulation machines, mm-hmm. because that's the only time that the machines are put online. And so if you push, I don't know, some type of code that would cause it to switch, you know, if this, then that kind of, but if you do a mail-in ballot, you can't change, mm-hmm. you can't change them. So they're always like, they're stuffing they're going to just, Gorsuch, I think, or maybe it was Alito was like, oh, if you let them do mail-in ballots, they're going to just stuff the mailbox full and find all these extra ballots later. And in reality, it's been Republicans that have been caught doing that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's the risk that they try to say it is. And I'm glad that we have mail-in ballots.
Yeah. No, it's – there's a lot of people that, I mean, their vote matters just as much. And for 100%. Whatever reason, they can't get to a polling booth.
Mm-hmm. I think older adults, folks in, you know, assisted care facilities, people, you know, younger adults that live with disabilities yeah. that may live in care facilities or live with the family member, you know, veterans, members of the military, anything like that. So I think the court was like, oh, we're going to look like real assholes if we do this.
Yeah.
Also, I don't think there was any even remote legitimate way that they could have spun that because the laws are yeah. fairly clear. Let's say, like, as long as it's postmarked, it's the same thing as putting it into the ballot yeah. box. You can't go back and change it. So it was a foolish run, but I'm glad they decided it positively.
The very next day, the 6-3 decision in National Republican Senatorial Committee, FEC, struck down coordinated spending limits. Kavanaugh's majority decision allows political parties to spend unlimited money in direct coordination with their own candidates. This means a donor's contribution to the party can functionally flow through to help a specific candidate in amounts far exceeding the $7,000 individual to candidate limit. Kagan warned in the dissent that it
ushers in the same opportunities for quid pro quo corruption that the contribution limits were meant to check.
We were talking about this just last night, and mm-hmm. man, they love a loophole.
Yeah, they love a loophole. And that's what it used to be that you, and guess who was one of the plaintiffs in this case? Then Senate candidate J.D. Vance.
Uh-huh.
So he got a little win. But yeah, it's now you can, I mean, up to $500,000 in some cases. I think the caps are intended to encourage small dollar donors. And the Democrat Party has a much higher level or higher rate of small dollar donors than the Republican Party. And so Kavanaugh's opinion in this basically tried to say, hey, this is treating everybody the same. It allows all political parties, DNC, RNC, House, Senate, whoever, any party committees can participate freely and more fully in these political processes. And you're like, well, if you're rich,
yeah.
Again, yeah. It's yeah. like, well, I'm one person and Jeff Bezos is one person. And yeah. so well, so do we both have the same amount of influence? They're like, no, you fucking poor loser.
Not even a little bit.
Of course you don't. No one fucking cares who you want to be, Senator Heather, because you're poor. Okay, if you're a billionaire, even a multimillionaire, we would care, but we don't. And if you're a multimillionaire, you could give your money to whatever candidate. Oh, really? Which one do you think they're going to give it to? Yeah,
the one that keeps them rich, I would imagine.
And so for them to go, this is great for everyone. I'm like, it's great for 1% of America mm-hmm. who has a disposable income that they could throw at candidates in this large amount.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
If you've got more than $7,000 to give to a political candidate, you are very rich.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't.
No. I don't have $700 to give nope. to a political candidate. That's insane.
Nope, I do not. But 70, like, well, I don't not. Even, it's pushing it at this point.
It's pushing it. But then it's like, well, I guess they don't deserve to be elected. It's like, well, my vote should yeah. count. Well, not if it's not mailed in on top. You're like, what's happening? They're coming yeah. at me from everywhere. It really is.
The court handed down two painful blows to the LGBTQ community, starting in March with Childs v. Salazar. In a surprising 8-1 decision, the court held that Colorado's ban on conversion therapy for minors discriminates based on viewpoint and must survive strict First Amendment scrutiny. Since it allows counselors to affirm a client's sexual orientation or gender identity, but not challenge it, the majority notably took no position on whether conversion therapy itself is safe or effective.
Couple of things. This was handed down March 31st, which is International Transgender Day of Visibility. And I imagine a fuck you decision on a day like that was not accidental, yeah. but perhaps I'm wrong. So secondly, we know conversion therapy is bad.
Oh, yeah.
We know. I'm not just saying that it's bad. Every major U.S. medical and mental health authority agrees it is unethical. It is harmful. It is associated with increased rates of suicidality, anxiety, depression. It causes people actual to kill suicide. Themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
All the time.
It causes people, period. So it's like the American Psychological Association, American Medical Association, American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry. Like, this isn't an opinion that maybe. So
shouldn't be just a hot as, topic, a hot take. It's, you know,
it's wild to me that it is. Kagan concurred, which means she joined in the majority to say this law does not pass the strict scrutiny, which is the highest standard of review. When a law purports to regulate speech, that's the government telling you what you can and cannot say. A law that purports to do that, when challenged, has to survive the highest level of scrutiny, which is strict scrutiny. So that means that it has to have a compelling government interest. And this is me going off of memory, but it's an extremely high bar that in this case, this law failed. The Kagan concurrent said if it had been content-based but viewpoint neutral, her argument was that she would have been okay with the law, but she's saying that the language of this law in Colorado was such that she thought it did run afoul of the First Amendment. Who but our sweet, wonderful Justice Jackson comes in, the lone dissenter, and warns that this is going to kill people. I mean, she said this is grave risks. Yeah. I mean, she says it's a grave harm, risks grave harm to Americans' health and well-being, and that, you know, kind of every fucking organization ever has said this will cause people to kill themselves. So it is an extremely compelling government interest to stop therapists from doing something that is ineffective and causes people to kill themselves. So it has nothing to do with this dumb bitch's, not Justice Jackson, but the therapist who was like, my rights, you idiot. You don't have a right. But like, as a doctor, I have a right to tell a patient to eat rocks to get rid of their cancer. And you're like, you act, but no, you don't.
Know the kind of that says the opposite of that.
But I think rocks are the way. And I tell them to eat rocks. You're like, that's medical malpractice. Mm-hmm. And I think telling a kid who it has gender dysphoria or who is struggling with their sexual orientation early on, telling a kid like, pray it away.
Yeah.
That's telling them to eat rocks and they're going to die because your stomach gets full of rocks and you can't poop out rocks. Don't eat rocks, you guys, and don't do conversion therapy. So Kagan, I mean, I hear you if you want to say nit wise you think maybe, but I would disagree that if you do think that strict scrutiny applies here, I think that this would pass it because it's a very compelling interest of not having kids kill themselves. Sinisterhood will be right back. You know what's easier than fixing a problem? Not having the problem in the first place. Your liver, it's one of those organs you don't really think about until you have to think about it. Supporting it daily is a small thing that you can do that will make a huge difference in how you feel overall.
That's where Dose for Your Liver comes in. It's a clinically backed liquid liver supplement, not a capsule, not a powder. A 2-ounce daily shot that actually tastes like fresh squeezed OJ. Zero sugar, zero calories, zero junk. Daily support for the organ that does the most.
Drink it every day and you can expect less sluggishness, fewer midday crashes, and better support for your metabolism and digestion. This isn't just marketing either. Dose has 2 double-blind, placebo-controlled studies backing up its positive impact on liver enzyme levels. Real science, real results.
Ready to give your liver the support it deserves? Head to dosedaily.co/creepy or enter creepy to get 35% off your first subscription. Your body does so much for you. Let's do something for it.
That's dosedaily.co/creepy for 35% off your first month subscription.
3 months later, West Virginia v. BPJ delivered a second setback. The court unanimously held Title IX permits sex-separated school sports, then split 6-3 on the constitutional question. Kavanaugh's majority ruled that bans on transgender athletes and girls' sports don't violate equal protection because
forcing female athletes to compete against males can undermine competitive fairness.
And that courts can't feasibly carve out individualized exceptions for athletes who've taken puberty blockers.
This is one of the most transphobic language full decisions that I've read ever. And hearing some more right-wing commentators discuss it, again, is just extremely transphobic. So just a content warning for folks that want to know more about this law. It is... they continually use the phrases like men who believe they're females, mm-hmm. those who are men who believe they're females. And the whole rationale for the whole decision is because of the sports are a different playing field, you guys, and sports are different, and sports is where we got to have these lines, okay? And of all people, Justice Kavanaugh, who's a big sports guy himself, of course, wrote the majority and did not consider what this does, which is to those trans girl athletes, it completely blocks them from participating. And the dissent was not asking, you know, you need to have everybody gets to be on whatever team they want. She's like, this doesn't even give this child a chance to participate. Mm-hmm. Which would, in fact, help treat the gender dysphoria to be able to, you know, play on a team with people that look like you.
Yeah, it's super sad. And goes, what are sports equal? More money. You know, I mean, this mm-hmm. starts like for girls and boys in elementary school and then goes all the way up to the NFL.
No, I mean, I think it's intended to open a door because the question in this was, does Title IX allow schools to prevent trans athletes from being on a sports team? The next question might be, does Title IX allow them to ban trans athletes from all things? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like right now it's almost like they might be able to do it. States can choose to ban it, but will the next question be, oh, states must ban it?
Yeah.
We think that Title IX actually means this. Whereas in Justice Jackson's dissent, she pointed out, like, if you're sorting the plaintiff in this case by team assigned to sex at birth, she's now suffering discrimination on the basis of her sex assigned at birth. Because mm-hmm. now you're putting a girl on for all intents and purposes, physically looks like a girl on a team with boys.
Yeah.
So it's, you're right. It's super sad and painful for all the kids involved.
Yes, definitely. Sotomayor's dissent, read aloud from the bench and joined by Kagan and Jackson, argued the ruling ignored an unresolved factual question, whether athletes who've never gone through male puberty actually hold any competitive advantage. She warned,
to the court, the facts do not matter, even though the consequences are serious. And it was very serious that she read her dissent from the bench. They don't always do that. And I think it shows that I think all three dissenting justices felt very strongly that, much like in the TPS case, they know that folks from Syria and folks from Haiti are going to be harmed. Here, they know trans kids are going to be harmed. It's just like in the last one, too, I think, although more people should have dissented.
Yeah. Taken together, both rulings share a pattern legal scholars have flagged repeatedly this term. The court sidestepping the underlying medical and scientific evidence, conversion therapy's harms in one case, athletic advantage in another, in favor of resolving each dispute on doctrinal grounds instead.
What we did not cover also is the shadow docket, which is what we've just discussed today is the merits docket, where they give you reasoning, they give you the majority opinion when everybody's name signed on it. But this term, the court repeatedly resolved very consequential high stakes disputes through unsigned orders. And you might have heard the term shadow docket. And that is where they just decide, they promulgate rulings on cases that are temporary relief where litigation is ongoing. And that might have been where you heard the Texas congressional maps for 2026. The passport gender marker policy was one of those. The Venezuelan TPS statute, different from the Haitian and the Syrian one. So where in the past they really didn't decide many things this way, either on a shadow docket or what's called summary reversal, which is where they say, we don't even care about there being any further litigation. This is the decision. They rarely did that in the past. In 2023, they did zero. In 2024, they did two. This term, there were eight summary reversals. So it's very nerve-wracking that more and more the court is happy to make what feels like rash decisions without oral argument and full briefing on the merits, and in some cases, binding decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what even in one of, again, she dissents, and one of them, Justice Jackson, dissented and was like, why are we doing this at all, much less this way, without getting the full information? And it's as if they don't care.
It is, isn't it?
It's like, we got power. Again, what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do about it?
Legal scholars have increasingly warned that the U.S. Supreme Court exhibits the hallmark of what Princeton's expert on democratic backsliding and autocracy, Professor Kim Lane Shepley, calls a, quote, captured court, a formerly independent court that gets captured by an autocratic leader who then uses the rule of law as a tool to oppress his opponents. Importantly, rather than simply rubber stamping an autocratic leader, a captured court preserves the fiction that they are still independent by strategically ruling against him in ways that still leave him a clear path to what he wants.
And she kind of she did an interview on the podcast Strict Scrutiny, which if you want more in-depth coverage, I can't recommend them enough, as well as SCOTUS blog and all the resources in our links. But she her interview is enlightening because she said there's three ways. Like, one, he fucked up and he wants to quit anyway. She calls it an autocrat walks into a cul-de-sac, like he's trapped. And that's the National Guard case, which was decided on the shadow docket, where he wanted to get the National Guard out of LA, but he was going to look kind of weak doing it. So the court comes in and goes, oh, for these legal reasons, you can't. And he goes, fine, yeah, I guess I'll just remove them. The other one is,
I don't want to, but y'all are telling me I have to. It's not my
fault. Exactly. Y'all made me leave. Whatever. I didn't want to leave, even though he wanted to. And then a second situation she described was the court's coming under pressure because they don't appear independent. So then they wait until he has another way, like the tariffs case, to rule against him. They knew full well he was finding another alternative route. And so they took a minute and then they released their ruling. And then that's when he's like, fine, whatever. I'll just use this other law. And then the third way is when there's a huge individual right at issue, like birthright citizenship, and it seemed as if she was ruling that the majority was ruling against Trump in birthright citizen, right? Everybody goes like, oh, it was preserved. Well, it was like barely preserved, like 5-4. And literally Justice Kavanaugh wrote in there, hey, if you did it this way, next time we'll just go your way, okay? And that's then J.D. Vance goes on Fox News and goes, we need to make sure we do it that way, you guys. So if not captured court, why captured court shaped?
Good question. Seen through that lens, the term's biggest headlines start to rhyme. One case preserved birthright citizenship on paper while quietly gesturing toward a legislative workaround. Other rulings stripped away agency independence, voting right protections, and LGBTQ safeguards with far less hedging. Where the executive's individual power was at stake, the court granted itself convenient outs. But where broader institutional checks and vulnerable communities were on the line, it simply let the losses stand. whether that pattern reflects genuine legal reasoning or something closer to Shepley's captured court theory is a question this term leaves wide open, and one next term will likely test again.
Sinisterhood will be right back. I tell you what, I was working out with my coach today because and my coach was in my office at home. I didn't even have to leave my office. And normally I wouldn't want to have a stranger in my house, but that's the magic of being on team formation with the Ladder app, which is an app that I could actually have a real coach taking me through every rep. And I just do it with my little dumbbells up against my own wall in my office.
I love it. I need someone guiding me in an exercise class. Always have. It makes me more accountable. One of the biggest things with going somewhere to work out is like, it's so goddamn hot outside. Like, I can't get everything on and then drive somewhere. But I'm like, oh, I'm already at home and I can control everything here. So let's go. Get me Ladder. What I love about the Ladder is that it's an actual plan. It's not just a library of random workouts that you scroll through, you don't know which one to do, then you forget about it. Every week, you get a new plan that builds on the last one, so your training is always moving forward through structured blocks. It feels like having a personal trainer right in your headphones, in-ear coaching, walking you through every set with form reminders, cues, and what I need the most, motivation. The app even remembers your weights and reps automatically, so you can actually see yourself getting stronger over time.
And that's for me. I need improvement over time because I'm like, I'll just do the same thing again and again. And this is like, no, you need to improve. And it's the variety on it is so real. You can do Pilates, bodybuilding, kettlebell, glute focused, at home dumbbells. There is a plan for you. You can also take it to the gym with you if you want. There's a group chat with your actual coach who will answer your questions and others in the community to help keep you accountable in some way that feels genuine. It's not forced. I do like that part. And then the Ladder also includes nutrition tracking at no extra cost. You can log your food, macro insights. It's all built into your training plan, and it's all for less than a dollar a day. Elite level personal training for a fraction of what you pay for a single trainer with an in-person session.
Remove the guesswork with Ladder and get a real coach in your ear telling you exactly what to do for every workout. No thinking, everything planned for you. If you have an iPhone, head to ladder.fit/creepy and take a quick quiz to find your perfect Ladder plan. Use our link and get a free 7-day trial with no credit card and $10 off your first month if you join. So what do we think?
I think that it is it shouldn't be so heart-wrenching that all these cases came around this way, because it shows us that someday the dissents can be law too. So maybe someday our dissents will be law.
Truly.
But I think it is much like the whole Mitch McConnell thing is a wake-up call, no pun intended, because that bitch ain't waking up, for term limits. This is a wake-up call for court reform. We need to pack the court. We need way more justices. We need term limits on justices. We need justices who are serving non-overlapping terms so that you don't necessarily see these coalitions forming and building. And I think we need extreme, robust conflicts of interest laws for the Supreme Court justices, and for them to even further than what they're required to. If they're going to a dialogue conference, for instance, if they're going on a fishing trip with a guy who's got a case that's maybe coming up in a year or two, I think all of that, I mean, you get a job that you can't get fired from. You have to be extra super good at that job. And I think our current court, the ones that aren't writing limp bullshit decisions, like Justice Alito, who I do think is like the most MAGA grandpa and does, like, his decisions don't even have legs under them anymore. It is just kind of like, you never know what they might do. And it's like, what do you, or Justice Thomas, who I think is taking bribes hand over fist
and has
and not reporting them
for his whole career.
Oh, his whole career, and his wife too, you know, and all these things. I just, there will be a time when we look back on this time and go, Jesus, how do we let it get like that? But I do, we got to take it and go, we're not, come on now.
Hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. I hope
sexy President Ossoff will do it for us.
Oh, man. Get in office. Get in that Oval Office.
Get in that Oval Office.
Uh-oh. Freudian slip.
He can slip something.
Uh-oh. Well.
No, it's just sexy when someone does their job real well, you know?
And maintains calm under pressure and doesn't let up. And that's what we need are people on the right side that aren't willing to bend the knee and will stare you right in the face and be like, once again, I'm going to ask you, who won the 2020 election? This is embarrassing. You're embarrassing yourself. And he is. And he looked like a small little man sitting there with this strong, confident senator saying, no, we can't let you get away with this. Like, it's such an embarrassment for this administration to 6 years later, like, they're still holding on to that. You look insane. You look like a crazy ex that won't let it go. And if you break it down like that, like, everyone would be like, you need to go no contact. You need to, like, block everything because he's just, like, coming after you. He won't let this thing go that happened 6 years ago. And that's all of them every day forever.
I heard a really good, I do agree, it's embarrassing. It's very much the emperor has no clothes. But I did hear a theory that Trump paid somebody something to win the 2020 election. And since he didn't, he's very convinced that it was stolen because he's like, can't outright say, like, I paid the Russians to steal it and I fucking lost and I never got my money back. Because I was like, why else would you be so, you felt so entitled to it? And it's not my conspiracy theory, but it was a good one that, I mean, and just given like the amount of information that's out there about, you know, foreign interference for him, like positive to help him. Yeah. I would not be surprised if he had like paid someone, did a real estate deal that was like for a Russian who was told him that they would help him or they would do these things. And then they didn't like follow through and he can't, you know, you can't overtly go on TV and be like, you screwed me. You know, it's like going to the cops and being like, my drug dealer gave me, you know, it's like, who were you working? Okay, well, we're not really the arbiters of that. So that might be one of the reasons.
Makes sense.
A brief shout out to Ossoff's colleague in the Senate, Raphael Warnock, who passed that law that said big ass companies like BlackRock can't own more than like 300 and some change houses. And so it'll divest, I think, a lot of folks from a lot of corporations from the housing market. So, you know, small beneficial moves like that and good people just putting their head down and doing the work. So shout out to, if you live in Georgia, congratulations. You have two really good senators.
Congratulations, Georgia.
Very jealous. Jealous.
We are jealous. Yeah. Our governor sucks.
Both our senators suck.
But they suck too. Only. Let's get a new one in there this year.
So close.
Everybody.
So close. So close. And if you're wherever you live, definitely check your elections near you, because J.D. Vance said it himself that the Senate race is extremely important, as is the House. I mean, that's who's going to pass this, the House and the Senate. And I think that's why the Republicans are terrified for the midterms. And Trump's like, you got to sign the law that disenfranchises like as many people as possible, because I'm not going to win. And if I don't win, I'm fucked. And that's true. You're a lame duck and you're probably potentially impeached, if not constitutional amendments, just depending on how big of a landslide it is. I think data centers are galvanizing people. I saw Aaron Brockovich on Theo Vaughn, and, you know, say what you will about Theo Vaughn, he just gave her a full platform. And I was like, he's not on anyone's side, much like Joe Rogan. They're not really on anyone. They're on their own side.
They're on the side that gets them the most views and likes.
Literally, it's like, what's popular now? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Hating data centers. Okay, I'll have this lady on. And it was like, Joe Rogan's like, what's popular now? James Tallarico, I'll have him on. And it's like, yeah, that's, there are follower. People are sheep.
When you're loyal to all, used to say, you're loyal to none.
People are sheep.
Yeah. Well, let's all get out there and do our part at the polls. You know, if you're in Texas, we're going Tallarico, everybody.
We can't wait. It's going to be good to watch him get sworn in and watch Ken Paxton move to another state.
Oh my God.
One of his 15 properties that he owns somewhere else.
Or just die. And that's the thing with Trump too. Like, I think he'll die before like he's impeached or anything like that. Probably if shit does start coming down and they do start losing, I mean, his health is already like, I heard yesterday from a source, not my own. I don't have White House.
Like, okay. How did I not hear?
Yeah, what if I had a White House source that I just hadn't told you
yet? Like, whoa. Good idea, because I'll tell everyone. I cannot keep a secret.
But it was that he's getting daily IVs of multiple liquids to keep his body alive, and that's why his hands bruise so easily, and he constantly has makeup on them. And, I mean, all the medical miracles in the world can't keep somebody alive. For, I mean, eventually our bodies give out.
and he is human. Maybe. The jury's still out on that one. However, his human body is going to eventually give out, and that's something we can all look forward to. And I think it'll happen. I think it's going to ramp up once the Dems start taking back stuff. It's just he's not going to be able to handle it.
No, I think so. And I think we're going to find out much later, like we did with JFK, that he had a doctor that was giving him magic injections, that he was getting injected with God knows what. JFK, it turns out he was getting injected with meth. Like, they were like, well, it makes him more focused and he can stand up longer. I was like, I bet it does.
Because you're crawling out of your skin.
He's on fucking speed. So I think it'll be fascinating, you know, 2 years, 1 year, 6 months, that we find out what those injections were and just exactly how bad everything was. I'm like, where you at, Jake Tapper?
Yeah.
Bitch.
Also, same source, smells like piss constantly. And
I can tell you that from the photos.
Yeah.
I can tell you that from the photos.
Everyone's like, their noses are scrunched, but he can't control his bowels. He has urinary incontinence. Like, he's just pissing and shitting himself constantly. How can someone so disgusting in every way you could possibly think of, how did we get him as our president? Like, how did this happen? And like
what
you said,
what do we do to deserve this?
Hopefully there's not a bunch of shit that changes in our history books and everything. So 10 years from now, people will see like, oh my, that was just the worst thing that the United States had done in a hot minute. Yeah, it was. And hopefully all these dissents and concurrences will in due time get us back to where we already were.
Yeah,
and
right.
Then we can continue to move forward.
No, I think so. I feel like there's enough people that are fed up with enough stuff at this point that even their massive amounts of donations aren't going to help. It's like the folks, if you're in Michigan right now, there's a huge senatorial race going on with Dr. Syed and then Haley Stevens. And she is heavily, heavily supported by corporate donors, I believe AIPAC. And his whole thing is take money out of politics and put money back in your pocket. And when you see now we have this new thing, it's like, oh, you can just any party can donate a limited money to anybody. I think we need to go back to the days of going, who donated to you? Mm-hmm. And like, who are you serving here? Because you're not serving me, the small dollar person that sent you $50. You're serving your corporate overlords. And so hopefully we get turn that into a stink. Like, if you're taking a bunch of rich man's money, you're the rich man's dog. And I'm not voting for a rich man's lapdog.
No. I don't even want to vote for a rich man. I really don't even want to vote for a man, period.
For real. You twisted my arm. Unless it's John Ossoff.
We're really getting down there, though, when it's a rich white man. I mean, I'm pretty much out on all accounts.
Exactly. Ugh, scratch that off. Ugh. And that. Ugh. Nah, so yeah, keep the faith.
Yes, keep the faith, everybody. Well, if you like our free episodes like this one, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We also offer free trials so you can join for a week, check out all the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. But if you stick around for an annual membership, you get 1 month free and fun stuff all year long.
Ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live stream bonus content that we let you all vote on the content you want to see. You get weekly audio bonus content like all those segments we just mentioned, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and of course, a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much for 5 stars and kind words. Submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover. Submit your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday and whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It's totally free. You just log on, enter your email, you get immediate access to the chat, to the videos, to a whole backlog of content just for free members as a thank you for signing up.
It's so much fun. We love you guys in the Sunday Scaries chat.
Also on our website, you'll find fun things like topic-based playlists and, of course, information and tickets for Crime Wave 2027.
Hell yeah. See you aboard. You can follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. And follow us over on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now, from happy birthdays to birth announcements to whatever it is you've done that deserves celebrating. We would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a thoughtful gift. It's perfect when you're not trying to shop last minute, trying to grab something that they don't already have. Every cameo is unique and can be booked for the best price at the website cameo.com/sinisterhood. Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts: Katie Elaine.
Mosif.
Megan.
Gio Marin.
Miranda Mail.
Megan Sturhan.
KT Fabe.
Rebecca Brown.
Jamie McCool.
Stacy Smith.
Lou.
A Silly Goose.
Jen.
Rachel Denise.
Zaid.
Cabinet of Curious Clay.
Megan C.
And Laurel H. We love all of you so very much. Thank you so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We hope we pronounce your names correctly. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Wah-ha-ha-ha.
Sinister.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players' $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.